As the 2020 presidential election approaches, newsrooms across the country are starting to assemble their political reporting teams. This past weekend, CBS News announced their group of 2020 reporters and producers, but it didn't go over well. Of the 12 reporters and producers named, a majority are white and none are black. But CBS is not the only news organization that has issues when it comes to having a diverse staff. A 2017 survey conducted by the American Society of News Editors found that minority journalists account for just 16.6% of newsroom staffs. Here at WNYC, where The Takeaway is produced, people of color make up 28% of our staff. So what's really at stake when newsrooms fail to represent the country they report on? We have some fantastic guests for you today. Ested Herndon is here. He's the national politics reporter for The New York Times. Hi, Ested.
Hey, how are you?
Thank you so much for coming. And we also have Darren Sands, national political reporter for BuzzFeed. Hi, Darren.
Hi, good to be with you.
All right, we have nothing to talk about, of course, right? Like, this is so not an issue. I've been talking about this for years. First, I want to get your reactions to I don't think it's a surprise, but your initial reaction to the tweet from CBS.
I knew the backlash was coming. I mean, this is something that, again, like, folks have been talking about for a long time. And I think Twitter has finally allowed people to get their say in on these newsrooms and force these newsrooms to think about things that would have just existed in kind of silos before. And so I wasn't surprised. And I think as folks in this industry, we know how deep and real this problem is. But I was hoping that people would think about it more structurally, not just CBS, but as an industry-wide problem that has a lot of necessary solutions that I'm sure we'll get to.
We're totally going to get to that. Darren, what was your reaction when you saw that tweet?
My initial reaction was that I know that there are, like, black people behind the scenes at CBS News.
they're there, yeah, right? And just there. To be clear, this was not a whole staff, right? Yeah. This was just a Politics 2020 team.
Right, it's a specific team. And I think that that nuance needs to be brought to the conversation as well. But that image is a very important one to see, and I think that it's really just something that people have sort of learned to jump on, mm-hmm. kind of when you see these images that are out there in social media that are sort of excluding an entire community, and people, that image gets out and it doesn't seem to, like, pass the right eyes to say, like, maybe we shouldn't do this. And I think that's part of, like, the issue too, is that they just don't see why that's not cool, you know?
And I want to bring that up because you're both making really critical points. I mean, the fact that we're all reacting to this is because it's an image, right? Mm-hmm. It was something that CBS put out, most likely with the good intentions. You know, there were some people of color in the staffing. But this thing about optics, right? And I think we often get sort of caught up in what makes sense, right? Often I think when news organizations are hiring, they're thinking about the optics, right? Do we need to have, you know, check off all these boxes of different reporters of color? This to me, and I say this all the time, diversity goes beyond optics. Can I hear someone back me up on that?
Yeah, it's much deeper than that. I mean, I think that there's two levels happening here. There's one, like, newsrooms are built on trust, and our ability to really get folks to read and believe what we're saying is built on trust. And I think optics matter for trust. I mean, I think that there are communities who want to see that there is someone in those rooms who come from their backgrounds, represent them, and have an ability, input on editorial decisions. So I think that optics does matter. But then on a kind of practical level, it matters much more for just a moral feel-good thing, but actual journalism. I mean, there are things that people from communities and there are people that they listen to that they can put in story ideas, that they can change stories in a way that can be really powerful. I know at the Times it's something that comes up a lot. I mean,
I know.
Yeah. And something like a Democratic primary, which is what we're going to be talking about for the next year, black voters are a central part of that. And so it's not just about feeling good. It's not just about having people warm and fuzzy, but actually doing the work necessary that I think communities rely on us for.
What about you, Darren? Why do you think that gets often, I feel like that gets lost in the conversation about diversity? Like, I think a lot of people think, well, I've got to check these boxes and fill the blank. It's deeper than that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think at BuzzFeed, they really think about it as a business imperative to be serving all communities as much as you can. And, you know, Jonah Peretti actually talks about this a lot. And I think that was important for a lot of us there to really take into account that we put our stories forth and not feel that we're being, typecast or that these important stories are important because they're American stories and they're not necessarily going
race stories.
They're not like race stories or just like the black stories. And I've stopped thinking that way like a long time ago. And I think a lot of us sort of have this inner dilemma, and sometimes we talk about it, is whether or not we cover black story after black story, and we sort of get, you know, pigeonholed into a corner. Whereas I think now, I think for Ostad and myself, I think I can speak for him. You can certainly speak for himself, but I think that we see these stories as being central to the narrative this cycle, and we also see these stories as being really inherently American because Black people are fully American.
We've been talking about that. I recall even the coverage of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. We were having to explain that Puerto Ricans are actually American citizens, right? Like there's a real lack of what we consider an American story versus a black story. I'm also curious about the black or brown story, really. Mm-hmm. I'm also curious about the value proposition that's expected of journalists of color. And I'm wondering, you know, I've worked in places where I've kind of had to be that backstop, that extra set of eyes, and you're both nodding because I think we've all been there, right? Yeah. It's not just we don't do just our job, we do our job, and then something I call race whispering.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like like you're talking about, it's finding blind spots for that the organization may be missing. And I think it's a real problem in the industry. You are asking minority journalists to do this unpaid labor that should be coming from the organization having a real institutional commitment to this. Mm-hmm. And so I think that everyone needs to make their own calculation. I understand the black and brown reporters who say, this is not my job, I am not paid for this, and I won't do this. I think that's totally fine. I'm of the opinion that I want to help in ways that I find manageable. And so if that requires me, you know, back reading something, if that requires me doing other input, I kind of feel like, you know, good karma will come back around. But I understand the people who say the opposite because you're not paid for that. And that's just another burden and expectation on top of your actual job that can really weigh on folks in a unique way.
And Darren, I want to go back to the value proposition question too, because let's think about how many when I asked this question a couple years ago on Twitter in particular, you know, where are my investigative journalists? Where are my political journalists? Where are my science journalists, healthcare? People of color in those beats are severely underrepresented. So it's not just the fact that we're underrepresented in newsrooms. It's that in these particular beats, we're underrepresented. Your thoughts, Darren, on what that does to political coverage?
I think a lot. I mean, I could talk a whole lot about that. But I think, like, I hope what this conversation does is take us to a point where we can be constructive about this dilemma in our industry, and it's not politics, it's science, it's the environment, it's all of these different beats that I think are just vitally important for Black people to be approached and our issues to be approached with nuance and understanding.
I remember having to tell someone once, I am not the Hispanic affairs reporter because I'm a Latina. I just happen to cover national issues, and they happen to do with race. So I think we also have the responsibility, but outside of the fact that we provide a sounding board or our quote unquote cultural expertise, you know, what are the other value propositions that we bring to the table? Because Darren, you just brought up the AKA Kamala Harris situation. Remind our listeners what happened there.
Yeah, there was an event, I believe it was in D.C. Kamala Harris was being interviewed by a journalist on stage live, and there were lots of reporters tweeting it. And at some point or another, Kamala Harris, who's the senator from California and presumably running for president, was introduced. And she usually does this thing where she talks about people who are in the crowd, and she does this really warm acknowledgement sometimes. And there were a lot of women from the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority in the crowd, apparently, who were there, and they have this call, basically, if you're in Greek life, it's called skiwi, and it's a very piercing sound.
Let's just be clear. I went to a state school in New York, and there were AKAs everywhere. Yeah. So like,
I was in Wisconsin, and we still had AKAs.
Right, you know? this wasn't like a secret society we're talking about here. Okay.
Right, and so obviously, right, public thing, and when they responded this way, the reporter from the Washington Post had tweeted that they began screeching. And I think that was just one of those points about like cultural nuance that we're talking about, where if you don't know necessarily what's happening, that as Black journalists, we are sort of given this like imperative that we need to be asking questions. Mm-hmm. And it seemed in, at that moment that it was sort of a glimpse at this idea that, you know, some white reporters, even if they don't know what's going on, that they're going to respond, like, they're going to cover it the way that they see it and just kind of move on. And I think that people, readers in particular, were struck by that because they, you know, Black readers in particular, because they feel like they want to know that the reporters know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And that if they don't, that they are going to approach it with a sense of care and nuance. So something like that, for instance, something is really as personal that it, like it feels like she's an HBCU, a product of an HBCU, and having pledged a Black sorority, that feels like really personal, I think. Even, I don't think you have to be an AKA to feel that in a way. Right. And so I think there was just like a level of insensitivity that was just transferred in that moment that kind of just, I think, is sort of this glimpse at what we're talking about. And I don't know, I'm curious like what you actually feel about that moment, because I know that, I mean, you had a lot to say, but
yeah, I mean, I don't want to deeply insult another, like, just a person individually. Right, I think it's tough. I mean, I one thing I will say is, you know, having been a Black reporter who covered crime in New England, you have to be very aware of, we're kind of trained to know that our identity is impacting this situation and learning how to navigate that. And I think that sometimes something that white reporters like never have to go through, because they're often in situations where their identity is catered to. And so this is kind of a rare situation in which a national presidential candidate is having a hyper Black moment, to say, you know, for lack of a better word, and that is actually just a glimpse into something that minority reporters go through all the time.
Right.
And so I think that speaks to the value proposition question. Is it's not just the obvious things. It's just that there is like a level of understanding how you as a person and as a reporter have to navigate situations that may not be your exact. You know, it may not be exactly what you're used to, because that's kind of how we operate through the world. And, you know, oftentimes or sometimes white reporters don't have that experience, and it can play out in these ways that I think really diminish trust. And I think, like, that's the pitch that I'm always making to, you know, editors and bosses. It's like, we have a trust problem. And
with who?
I think we have a trust problem with minority communities. And, like, I think we talk a lot about the Trump voter media trust problem.
Do you think they care? I think that there's a problem with people, communities of color? Because that really feels to be the question to me. Like, do they care?
I don't know. I think we should care. I think it's our moral responsibility to care. Are they our subscriber base? And is there a financial incentive to care? Is a whole separate question. But I think we are supposed to care. And so my pitch is always, like, this is a community that distrusts us for legitimate reasons, for reasons in which we have failed over and over and over again. And so, like,
As journalists.
Mm-hmm. And like doing this work, we're only asking us to apply our same journalistic principles to a community that has not seen the best of those. And so, like, when we fail, it really, really matters.
Yeah,
I mean, and folks remember that.
What about the expectation of this level of, like you said, when you fail, it really, really has an impact, right?
Yeah.
Journalists of color, I feel, are not allowed the same space to fail. I feel as though there is a certain level of objectivity that we're expected to have that is not expected from other journalists. Am I wrong on this? I don't know. Like, it's almost like there's a sense that if you're Black and writing a Black story, quote unquote, if you're Latina and writing a Latino story, can you really be objective? I don't see that same thing coming out necessarily with white reporters.
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, like, I can give you a vague, last midterms, I wrote a story about a Black candidate, and their white opponent emailed the New York Times arguing that I was biased, frankly, because of no other reason except it was a Black reporter writing about a Black candidate. And that comes up all the time. There is an idea that, especially if you write about issues of race, or if you are writing about someone with a certain level of cultural sensitivity or understanding something about that Black candidate's background that is just more nuanced and contextual, that that's actually bias and not just journalism. And it's partly and I think we have to think about it in the inverse. Like, it is the reporters who are failing on race who are foregoing our journalistic principles, right? Like, it is not us. Like, we are doing the work. We are doing the job. Like, that, like, the folks who aren't talking about it are the ones who are contorting themselves to, like, not apply journalism to every community. Sorry, that was a big rant.
I was just going to say, are they also the ones using racially tinged?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite phrase.
You know, one of the things that I've learned, very, very, it's amazing to me, but, like, people don't like that word, racist.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's, like, if is that on me? Like, whose responsibility is it to be, like, sensitive about race? You know what I mean? Like,
that's a great question.
Toni Morrison always talks about, you know, growing up and someone having told her, and she said this publicly, but talking about this idea that, like, racism isn't my problem, it's theirs.
Yeah.
And it really has become almost this pejorative, this untouchable pejorative that it's like, if you call something racist, that people get so offended by, and there's a performative aspect of this idea that you are sort of rejecting that you're racist or not. And I think, it starts at sort of like at the top, right? With the president and this idea that, he condemns racism in all of its forms, but has these kind of things that happen over the course of his presidency that we look at it and we're like, wow, that is wild racist. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's such a chasm between, like, where I think where we are as journalists and as reporters, and how people think about, and that's why we have these conversations, right? About, like, you know, what is racist? What should we call racist?
Right.
What's racially tinged? What's, you know, I don't know. And I think we're getting to the point almost where we can start to call racially tinged racist because it's not calling it, you know, what it is.
Can I say one point on that? It's just like, conservatives have changed the meaning. I mean, they changed the meaning of the word racist, right? They made it so that every use of racist was about a question of somebody's heart, that you had to know what was in their soul. Mm-hmm. But that's not the meaning of the word. I mean, the word has we actions can be racist. You know, language can be racist. And that, like, has nothing, that's not necessarily an indictment of the human being, but an accurate description of, like, words that come from an ideology that, you know, is based in white supremacy or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think journalists have, like, intuitively adopted that conservative bias meaning of the word racist. And so that we're avoiding using it as if it, again, is an indictment of some person's soul, when I'm not even asking you to say an individual's racist. I'm asking you to say that the actions are. I'm asking you to say that the language is. I'm asking you to, like, accurately describe what the baseline, the ideology at the center of it. And all of those things are things that I think we've gotten too scared to touch because, frankly, we've been spun by conservatives and the right who have made that an intention and made us so wary about doing that work.
Yeah. And, so, you know, to take it a step further, I think that a lot of the work comes in with this idea that, you know, I talked about how we create a constructive situation out of this CBS News thing. And I think that people need to have a sort of a come to Jesus moment about, you know, race and how we use a situation to have an honest conversation and then to have a conversation about how we fix those things. Because a lot of times when, you know, something happens, right, and we get to this point where, you know, we stop talking about it and then it goes away and then that's it.
And then we see a tweet.
Yeah.
Until the next time. And then, like, nothing ever happened. So, like, what are the mechanisms right now in place that we can sort of use to sit, look at this situation, talk about why it's really messed up, talk about how we can build institutions and build on ideas that can help fix the problem, and then how do we move forward? And if we're not having that conversation about how we move forward from things, and we're just like sort of, you know, churning the wheels on the outrage machine and just never really getting beyond that until the wheels aren't turning anymore, then I don't know, like, I don't want to live in that society.
Ested Herndon is a national politics reporter for the New York Times, and Darren Sands is a political reporter for BuzzFeed, covering the 2020 elections. Thanks to you both for taking the time and joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega.